now.
I don't know who he is behind that mask of his, but I do know when we need him. And we need him now.
I'll call him, sir.
For some reason, cool bars in Hollywood have to be hard to find and have to have no sign.
This is the Cocktail Nation.
Another week in the Cocktail Nation penthouse as we broadcast across the globe, spreading that lounge and exotica sound from coast to coast. This week we are talking to a marvellous artist who recorded her one and only album in the late 1950s and was only recently discovered by a whole new audience. News on the passing of the great Hal David, and this is Billy May and Nando's Hideaway in the Cocktail Nation.
Cocktail Nation. Thanks to UltraSwank.net.
The Cocktail Nation Cube Cooper, Plas Johnson. Tonight, I'm joined by a woman who recorded in the 1950s, and it's always marvellous to talk to people who are actually there during the period of time that we just absolutely love here on the Cocktail Nation. Her name is Laurie Allen, and she recorded an album called Paradise, which I downloaded off iTunes a little while ago. And Laurie got in touch with us after hearing the show on our affiliate station, Penthouse FM, out of New York City. She joins me on the line. Hello.
Hello, Coop. It's great to talk to you.
Now, you've got an incredible story, an album that was recorded back in the late 1950s, but something went wrong. And people discovered the album when it was released something like 47 years later. What's the story, Laurie?
Yes, well, it was strange. Evidently, in fact, one of your fans filled both of us in on some facts that I didn't even know. I just knew that about 5 minutes, I guess, after the CD was made, the company went into receivership, and I had to fly back to Texas. So I was waiting all this time for it to be released. I had such promise in those days. I mean, things promised to me.
Mm.
And I was supposed to be on Steve Allen's show and come back when it was released. And I'd read for some kind of a sitcom in those days at NBC. And I just thought, oh, my star is on the rise. And I waited and waited, and it never came out because in the meantime, they had gone into bankruptcy. So I think I was the last CD. It was a nice stable of talent. There were some great musicians. The 50s really did contain a lot of fabulous musicians, and I'm not putting myself in that category, but I was fortunate enough to rub elbows with some. And a lot of those people were on the Mode label, and so it seemed an awful shame that they were lost. But according to your friend David, another company bought those, and they didn't take very good care of them. So just with the invention of the internet, I was able to find, through kind of a amazing happenstance, that they were being going to be released by BSOP. And so I contacted him, and he was so surprised that I guess that I was still alive. A lot of those wonderful guys on the CD are no longer with us. And so it was like, as I said in my liner notes, I'd hate to repeat myself, but it was like being a ghost at my own past, because I heard the raw take. So there was only one side of the CD that was saved, and the other side was somebody had made a tape recording. So it had to be refurbished, but I could hear my voice, and everything was done in one take, but I know I begged them several times if we could do it again. But that was the way they did all of their albums, which I didn't know. Nobody warned me. So I didn't mean to take one breath and start talking so much, but that's sort of the way it was, and that's why it was not released until I found and contacted Peter Jacobson of VSOP, and he was really happy that I could release, the rights to it, and that he could release it. And certainly I was delighted.
Yeah, what happened with Mode? Now, what is the story? Who is behind this album cover company, and what went wrong with them?
I don't really know, unless they just overstepped. I know the musicianship on mine was incredible. I mean, can you imagine the Hollywood String Quartet? And Marty Page was already quite the star, and there were people on there. Mel Lewis, the drummer, like everybody he's just their mentor. The bass player, Fred Mitchell. And so many greats were on there. I even had a harp. I mean, so they must have just overstepped in a way, and maybe whatever they were counting on didn't come forth. But I'm sure they didn't know at the time,
because
they had other people lined up. And they had a Hungarian artist was doing the covers. And, of course, mine, I posed for the pictures, but those were lost. I think someone bought all the rights to those, and So when Peter did it, he just took one of the photographs that had been made of the session.
This was 1957 when all this happened. And of course, then the thing was shelved, and amazingly, like you say, because the the magic of the internet, it's been released. And this must be hilarious to you when you think about it. That 47 odd years 50 odd years later, people are actually going, "Wow, who's this gal? You're being interviewed on a radio station." It's kind of like delayed fame.
Well, it is. It is. And I guess, in a way, my whole life has been wrapped around the question. I finally quit even telling people that I had even made this because I had no proof. And my brother traveled with Frank Sinatra. He was Frank Sinatra's French horn player for 14 years. And we suspected that Frank had bought the rights, and
right.
He kept asking. Of course, you didn't get that close to Mr. Sinatra, but kept asking his son. My brother was pretty close to Junior, and he acted like, well, he would look and try to find him. We just thought, well, he got too busy, and probably if it was the case, they were melted down and pressed into somebody else's vinyl. So we never knew, and it was almost like it never happened. And because I didn't have the record, I guess I just kind of rolled it up. And,
yeah.
I never pursued singing again.
You never sang. You didn't hit the nightclubs or anything like that. It just wasn't the case.
Well, I went back to Texas and for a while, and then I went back to Chicago and. Somehow, I just had such painful memories. The cloister had changed hands or had moved on, and I didn't really, I don't know, my heart was broken.
Mm.
So I modeled a while and stayed there and worked in an art studio and, did things. But I just felt like singing, I couldn't get it out.
Mm.
Yeah, I couldn't get it out of my heart, so my daughter has laughed at me that I, not laughed at me, but she's come into the kitchen where I'm singing with the radio and tears running down my face, so she's seen that it was still with me, and so now, with the advent of you and Bob Perry and a couple, and Rich, Keith in New York, I'm getting some play, and I found that I'm still played a lot in Japan.
Right.
They're so hip in Japan and love jazz, I think more even than the United States. And so I was thrilled to find that, that I was played there because Helen Merrill is just their idol, and she's one of mine. So I felt like, I had a little bit of notoriety there. And so I've started practicing again, and I'm hoping to at least do clubs here in the Pacific Northwest.
Yeah.
And maybe record again if it gets that good. But I think of a way I'm singing better.
That's what I was going to ask you. It's amazing because the chops sometimes get better with age with a singer. We think of Frank Sinatra, he had that very reedy sort of voice when he first started out, and then by the 50s and 60s, he had that incredible timbre in his voice. Do you think that sort of worked out for you?
Well, I think my voice is, I guess I don't have any proof of how I sounded other than on the CD.
Mm.
I think I did my best singing in just before I got to Chicago, and that was with Tommy Wolfe in St. Louis, because we had this incredible rapport, and I could sing. I was the first one to ever sing "Spring Can Really Hang You Up the Most," which is now kind of an anthem to singers, and in public. I mean, I was the first one to sing it in public, and although it got recorded fairly soon by everyone after that, but. I think my voice is richer, and certainly it's lowered a bit. And I was awfully nervous at the session, so I don't think it. I don't know. Can't remember maybe how I might have found it in a more intimate setting.
In 1957, when you first recorded, in reality, as a singer, you might have had maybe 10 years, maybe less, of an opportunity to really be famous and mainstream. When you think of something that Tony Bennett said, that he said that the late 60s and 70s were not very kind to him, in that the music tastes had changed. Music tastes had changed a lot. Whereas now in 2012, because of the internet and because of a resurgence of interest in the American standards, in lounge music and jazz, it's all turned around. I mean, you know, music seemed to be so much more fragmented by the tastes of the day. Whereas nowadays, everything you want, you can get musically. So, if anything, you know, probably to gain some notoriety is better.
You're so right. I mean, because there was just a dearth of jazz and good music, for at least what I call good music, for quite a while. If I may, I have a funny story about Tony Bennett. I think I must have finished a set, and I had gone upstairs from the cloister to the coffee shop, although not the coffee shop, but the dining room, and was having a cup of coffee, and someone came to me with a note, and it said, Tony Bennett would like to meet you. I was just absolutely thrilled, and so I said, well, of course, and he said, well, he's working, I guess, somewhere else, and he'd like to take you. We used to go out to breakfast after work. I mean, you know, after you'd get off your set at midnight or 1 or 2, then everybody would go out to eat, and we just called it going out to breakfast. So he said he would, and I don't even remember how. I guess he came and picked me up in the cab, and I didn't even have time to change. I had on a cocktail dress, and we went to an Italian restaurant, and, you know, I could hardly breathe. I was so excited. I had no idea. I thought, when did he hear me? You know, and what is this all about? And so he just made small talk for a while. We had coffee, and I couldn't even think of eating anything. And finally, he asked me the important million-dollar question, what is it like to work with Ralph Sharon? Because Ralph Sharon was my pianist.
Right.
And I said, oh, he's wonderful. He's wonderful. He's just this funny curmudgeon. I said, he's just, you know, and I just thought, you know, I thought, well, that's just part of the conversation. Mm. Well, after I told him about that, then the conversation was over, and he said, well, we better get on. It's getting late. And so he dropped me off at my apartment, never got out of the cab or walked me to the door or anything. But I mean, he was certainly a gentleman and quite nice. But as it turned out, then Ralph Sharon, he took Ralph Sharon, and Ralph Sharon became his pianist for about 30 years. So my big date with Tony Bennett was only after one thing, and that was Ralph Sharon. So I'm sure Tony would laugh about it too. And he sketched a picture of me on a napkin, and it was just a tiny thing. And I kept it in my billfold for years until it finally just disintegrated, because it was just a paper napkin.
Yeah.
And so, and beside, he didn't sign it. So I thought, who's going to believe this? It's almost like my whole life has been kind of one of people look askance when you try to tell them about it.
It's so funny because often when a gal goes out on a date, she thinks, well, a fella might be after one thing, but he was after something that you didn't expect he was after.
It was your penis.
Your penis. A reference.
It was funny. I doubt that Tony remembers that, but I know he remembers Ralph Sharon, and Ralph's still alive as far as I know. And
wow.
He was a brilliant pianist, and certainly was kind to me, because I didn't have any charts at the time, and we just did a lot of head arrangements, but he was so brilliant. He could play anything in any key, and we never really rehearsed. I mean, it just was so natural. So it was a lovely experience.
Laurie Allen, thank you very much for talking to us today.
Hi.
Laurie Allen on The Cocktail Nation. What an amazing story. Here's the title track off her album, which you absolutely need to grab off iTunes. It's called Paradise.
I'm just a woman who loved a man. But our house of love was built on sand. While it lasted, oh, it was grand, my love. We lived and loved, our day is through. But each night in dreams, it started anew. He comes to me as he used to do, my love. And then he holds my hand.
Shoulders wondering where you're going tonight. Where are you going, Frank?
Don't tell me not to fly. I've simply got to. If someone takes a spill, it's me and not you. Don't
the Cocktail Nation.
Cocktail Nation Coop Cooper Lounge Leader Spyfy and Bryce's theme. Some news through this week that Hal David, the pop music writer whose prolific collaboration with composer Burt Bacharach produced a wealth of enduring hits in the 1960s and early 1970s, including Walk On By and What the World Needs Now Is Love, Raindrops Keep Falling On My Head, has died at the age of 91. Hal David died in Los Angeles of complications from a stroke. He wrote several hit songs with other collaborators before teaming up with Bacharach in 1956. And in May, Hal David and Burt Bacharach were honoured by the US President Barack Obama as two kings of songwriting and were awarded the Library of Congress Gershwin Prize for Popular Song, Popular Music's highest prize. He's certainly going to be missed. What amazing talent. From an album that was recommended to me not so long ago by Darren Long in Nashville. This one, another one that he sent me, Cal Jada Sounds Out Burt Bacharach. And this is My Little Red Book on the Cocktail Nation.
Oh, てくる気の早いセミが鳴きカレンダーをめくり海開きそのニュースが夏を知らせる季節の足音が聞こえてくるたびに誰も生きるという喜びに満たされている穏やかに時は過ぎ今日も輝いて一日が
album Soul of the Sea on Coop Cooper's Cocktail Nation. Thank you.
Cocktail Nation, Lance Leader, Coop Cooper, one from the brand new Tiki Joe's Ocean album, Soul of the Sea. That was Bom Dia Ipanema. And speaking of Tiki Joe's Ocean, we're going to be catching up with Andy Nazal next week, but he has got his album release coming up very, very soon. We'll talk about that in the What a Swank gig guide. I'll let you know when that is. That's coming up inside the next 20 or so minutes. A note from John in Aberdeen, who left a nice little comment on the site this week, writing, "Dear Coop, I must say that while I found the Cocktail Nation Searching for a Bossa Nova podcast, you have single-handedly helped me clarify and define a major style of music that I love. I've been listening to you for a couple of years now, and I look forward to every show. Thanks so much for your message, John. Much appreciated." And you can get in touch with us via our website, cocktailnation.net, also via the social media pages, coop.cooper for Facebook, Cocktail Nation for Twitter. We're also on Google Plus as well. Here's Les Baxter, Left Arm of Buddha, on the Cocktail Nation.
What's up? Bonbons.
Bonbons? I love them.
Just a minute, not so fast. This may be the old bomb in the bonbon box trick. Better check it out.
We'll be right back.
The Cocktail Nation, Cuckoo, Stereophonic Space Sound Unlimited, and Revenge of the Belly Dancer. Latest in the series, Fight Card. New one's out called Bluff City Brawler. It went live on Amazon just the other day, and I've read it, and I just absolutely loved it. It kept me up all night. And once again, another two-fisted tale of boxing mayhem. Tom Riley makes a meager living in the ring in Detroit, but it's good enough for him. He isn't ambitious. A few bucks and a rather high opinion of himself for all he needs. When he accidentally kills a connected mobster, he's forced on the lam and winds up in Memphis, the Bluff City. He struggles to make a new life for himself there, but his past mistakes are about to catch up with him in spades. The Detroit mob is closing in. Tom's future is about to be decided in blood and in the ring. Get onto the Fight Card books because they are absolutely spectacular. Pulp 50s style boxing books that are just superb. And they're nice short books too, so they're easy to read. Won't take a whole lot of time, have your day. But they are well worth checking out. And the covers, man, the covers are just fantastic. Fightcardbooks.com is the website to check out. Time for a look at the world of Swank right now. As I mentioned, Tiki Joe's Ocean City release party coming up Saturday, September the 15th from 8 p.m. with appearances by Andy Nazal, Marty Lush of Tikiaki Orchestra, Doug Horn of Swamp Fire Lounge. Also got the autographed CD and artwork raffles and Tiki Joe's Potion Cocktail Special. And DJ Marty Lush is going to be spinning some exotica down at the Tonga Hut in North Hollywood. If you're looking for something to do in New York City, Primitiva in Hi-Fi every Tuesday, PKNY 49 Essex Street in New York City. Another regular, Otto's Grotto, the first Wednesday of the month, 8 p.m. till midnight, Forbidden Island, Alameda. Tiki Cowboys, the third Thursday, Throwdown at Tiki Terrace in Illinois. Here in Sydney, the Cherry Pop and Daddies are back on stage Friday the 2nd of November at the Factory Theatre in Sydney, and on the 5th of November in Melbourne at the Corner Hotel. Also in Sydney, the Aston Martinis are playing on the 19th of October at Club 5 Dock, the RSL there. It's a nice little club, actually. It doesn't look like an RSL. It looks more like a nightclub from 8 to 12. TheAstonMartinis.com is their website if you'd like to check that out. Of course, plenty of gigs on the Cocktail Nation website that we update regularly. And if you'd like to be perhaps sending us an event that you might be involved in or perhaps going to, maybe you're a band, email thecocktailnation@gmail.com. We'll put it up there for you. Let's get back into the music right now. And Ludwig Böss from the OS 117 movie series. This is Speed Date Car on the Cocktail Nation. Cocktail Nation, thanks to ultraswank.net. Coop Cooper with Orchestra Superstring and Mambaquita. That's off their latest album. Now, I've got a big week coming up this weekend, heading off to do another photo shoot with good friend Jack McGuire, who's shot many of the photos that we've used on our Cocktail Nation website. So we're going to have a whole bunch of new photos from around Sydney for you to check out. You check out some of the beautiful scenic parts of Sydney with me in it. And a lot of other surprises as well coming your way. So we're going to be snapping a few photos this weekend with a special photo shoot for the Cocktail Nation. On the show next week, Andy Nazar from Tiki Joe's Ocean. Looking forward to that. Right now, Bob Thompson and Sub Manhattan Blues. Stay hip.